Well,
so
it's time.
It's been a really nice warm beginning to January, and I've got a couple of notes. I'm expecting that we're going to hear from more students coming up in the next week because they're getting back to classes this week. And so we will have some student phenologies for you coming up again next week. But stay tuned this afternoon, later this morning in the 8 o'clock hour, actually about 8:40, we're going to be talking with a young man from, from St. Louis Park, Minnesota, who has taken a very, very big interest in wolves. And we're going to be speaking with Ames Davis about wolves in Minnesota. And we will have that for you about 8:40 this morning. In the meantime, I got this note from a familiar name to KEXE listeners. If you've been a member of the station for a while, you'll remember Brenda Greeley. Brenda sent me this email. She lives along Pakegama Lake and on a road called Mishawaka. And she said, Mishawaka has had a visitor as of late. This photo was taken on the lakeside of the Mishawaka Road, across the road and to the north, one house from me by my neighbor. Additionally, another neighbor a couple of blocks further north said she nearly hit it with her car. I am most curious about your thoughts about this big guy gal. My husband thinks coyote with the pointed nose. I think wolf because of its height and girth. Now, you can't see the picture that I'm looking at, but it is a lovely gray to brown coyote, I think. It's fairly large. It would be like, you know, a Labrador-sized canid. And the thing that I think is making Brenda wonder whether it might be a wolf is the fact that in the winter, of course, all of these animals grow a really healthy layer of fur in order to protect themselves, to keep themselves warm in these colder days. Now, we are, of course, not enjoying the real cold that we might associate with New Year's and with January, but it'll come. And if you were sleeping outside at night, you'd want a good heavy fur coat. The animal is, there's something about seeing a wolf. Once you see a wolf, you immediately know the difference between a wolf and a coyote. There's just a huge difference in the animals. And the other thing that makes me think that Brenda is looking at a coyote is that barring some sort of disease, mange, or some other affectation, I would not expect a wolf to be out in broad daylight in a public area, in an area where there are homes and houses. I have never seen that. I've seen coyotes in broad daylight, and I've seen coyotes out in areas where there were lots of houses, but I have never seen a wolf in those same situations. All of the wolves I've ever seen have been pretty much in what I would call deep woods. The other thing about the coyote is that since the arrival of Europeans on this continent, coyotes, even though they have been oppressed by just about every group of ranchers, farmers, chicken growers, whatever, they have flourished and they have persisted. And if you think that you're going to wipe coyotes out of an area, all you're really going to do is wipe out a few coyotes in front of you, but the other coyotes that live around that area are going to create more coyotes, and they're going to fill that area back in regardless of your efforts. They just persist, and they're very well adapted to living with humans. She goes on to say, I took a midday walk in the woods behind my house, noticing rabbit and deer tracks, plus the tracks that were about half the size of my outstretched hand. Now I'm looking at my hand, and I have a fairly large hand. I can reach down and pick up a basketball, but you know, a wolf track would be more than half of my hand. So again, I just think it's I think it's probably a coyote that's hanging out along Mishawaka Road. But I'm thrilled that the people who live along there are getting a chance to see it. Brenda goes on to say, thank you for your phenology reports. Two more years and my grandson will be in Miss Jackson's sixth grade class at North Shore Community School to report. And then she says, happy new year from the Greeleys on Mishawaka Road in Grand Rapids. Brenda, thanks for that wonderful note. And wow, I don't know what to tell you. An opportunity to see a coyote is always exciting. One more note, and this may be something that we'll want to pursue, Heidi, in the near future. And that is that the Department of Natural Resources are soliciting black spruce cones. Mm-hmm. And they're paying a pretty good price for black spruce cones. And I know why. Because when I was a child, we used to pick up extra money by picking cones, Norway pine cones or white pine cones or even spruce cones. But believe me, picking a Norway pine cone was a breeze. And picking a white pine cone was simple. But picking a spruce cone was like, it was the worst experience because you had to climb the spruce tree and it's all branches. There's no place to put your feet or your hands. It's just this struggle to get to the top of the tree. And then when you do get there, you know, there are lots of cones around, but you got to remember at this time, I probably weighed 80 or 90 pounds, maybe 100. And I'm hanging on to a tree that's maybe an inch and a half thick. And the odds are that the top could break off and I would fall to the ground, which did happen to me once when I was picking Norway pine cones and knocked the wind out of me, but didn't knock any sense into me because I went back and picked more cones. But
well, you must have been reading my mind because that was the announcement I was just looking at about the black spruce cones. And you're right, they $85 a bushel, but you can find information on how to properly collect those. You have to climb up trees to collect black spruce cones?
Well, they're at the top of the tree.
Tall? Okay.
You either have to cut the tree down, which seems to me, I guess, you know, you'd get more seeds and potentially more black spruce than the one that you cut down. But at the same time,
yeah,
if you look at a black spruce cone, look at the end of your little finger and look at just the end of your little finger. That's about the size of a black spruce cone. The last knuckle to the end. Well, on my finger, it'd be half that size. It's about 1 inch. It's they're about a half inch by a half inch. They're very, very small cones. And a bushel of them would require a fair amount of effort, I would think.
But, you know, it could be something interesting to do. You can collect them from your own property or state forest land. You can find out how to properly collect those or where to find the black spruce cones in your area at the DNR website. But you can drop them off at the Hill City Field Station or DNR area offices in Bemidji, Deer River, and Hibbing, or the Minnesota State Forest Nursery. There's an opportunity for you if you want to try something new, you know. I had no idea. I, for some reason, hearing black spruce cones, I assumed they would be big. I had no idea they'd be that small.
Oh, man. It would be like picking a bushel of what's about the same size. Maybe a cranberry.
Oh, wow.
Might be a little bit bigger than a cranberry, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if we can't get a hold of one of these DNR foresters and find out what they're doing.
So
they're
It looks like they're trying to reforest about 6,000 acres of black spruce in Minnesota each year, so they need hundreds of bushels of cones. But yeah, we'll look into that a little more, maybe talk to someone from the DNR. If you are doing this, maybe this is something you've taken on, we'd love to hear from you and your experience as well, whether you were up the tree with John Latimer or not. You can email comments at KAXE.
Sometimes when I'm in my kitchen, a song will come on the radio that makes me start dancing. Then I start thinking about all the other people I know that may be dancing in their kitchens or workshops. Maybe they're singing along in their cars. The pandemic may have distanced us from each other, but KEXE, KBXE has helped me feel connected to the people in my community I wish I could see. And all of that feels very important to me. I'm Kelly Lindquist. And I support KEXE, KBXE. Yeah, we can swim oceans, climb mountains,
dance like nobody's watching, live life. Thanks to Kelly for reminding us to dance in our kitchens when we hear a good song. Crank up KBXE and KEXE. Be a part of something. Donate, become a member. That's how we can do it. People like you supporting what you're dancing to. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for your support. Baby, I got you, yeah. And you got me, yeah. Baby, baby, let's go on a journey. Sell the house. You could dance to Phenology, couldn't you, John?
Well, I was dancing the other day, and it felt good. It did.
Yeah.
It's always nice to move about, and sometimes I'm dancing over and under trees in the woods. And
right. You never know where it might happen.
Dancing around my dog. And yeah, it's always good. Cue the music, maestro. I might have been ready, except that for some reason, all I have on my screen is you and me, and none of my notes.
So. Okay. We'll give you a moment.
Let me just dodge around here and see if I can.
And don't forget that John always wants to hear from you. We would love your Phenology talkbacks, like we heard from Brenda earlier this morning. You can email John, Jay Latimer, at KAXE.org, or call our talkback line. The number is 218-999-9876.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology, as you are aware, most likely is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And just a short note about weather rather than climate. Climate is your wardrobe, and weather is what you're wearing today. Our weather has been absolutely balmy. I mean, it's just the lowest temperature I recorded for the month of December was minus 13, and the highest was 46 or 41, and the average was 16 degrees. So it was a pretty mild winter. Or December so far. I guess I can't say the whole winter has been mild yet, but it's been a pretty mild December so far, or a winter thus far. And speaking of winter, we have picked up 8 minutes since the solstice, and we are, now that we're moving into the early part of January, we're going to be picking up like a minute a day, and that will quickly increase to a minute and a half. And then by the time we get to Groundhog's Day, it'll be around 2 or 2.5 minutes a day. So you may have noticed that it's lighter later in the afternoon, but our sunrise is still hovering around the 8 o'clock hour. I think it's around 8:01 right now. And that is just an anomaly of our orbit around the sun. Rather than gaining time at both ends of the day, for that 10 to 15 days after the solstice, we sort of gain time in the evening and hold steady in the morning. And that's kind of our character right now. So been pretty nice. Expect looking out, it looks like it's going to be pretty nice for the next week or so. We took a lot of moisture out of the air in the last few days, although today is another foggy day, and I would expect that we will see more rime on the trees. And you may have heard the term rime, R-I-M-E, or hoarfrost. And basically, I used to think that it was the way that it collected on the objects in space. So I would see hoarfrost as something that collected on the windward side of an object and built ice crystals out in the direction of the prevailing wind. And I saw rime as more of a complete covering over the object. It turns out that the actual definitions are pretty simple. Rime is the freezing of water in the air going from a gas to a liquid to a solid. So it goes from gaseous water moisture or in the air as supported by the atmosphere to coalescing into a fog and then freezing as an ice coating on plants and fences and cars and trees and everything else. Hoarfrost goes directly from atmospheric gas, that is a gaseous suspension of moisture in the air, directly to ice, skipping the liquid phase. So that's sublimation. Anytime something skips a phase, that is, normally you'd have solid, liquid, gas, or gas, liquid, solid. If you skip the liquid part, if you, in the case of the atmosphere, go from water vapor to ice, that's called sublimation. If you reverse that and go from ice to water vapor, that's also sublimation. It is skipping that liquid stage in the middle that differentiates rime from hoarfrost. And what we have had in the last week, and probably will experience again today as the sun comes up, is rime. That is, we are going from gaseous water to liquid water, fog, to ice on the trees and plants. So, not that it matters. It's lovely, whatever it is. It really is makes a beautiful addition to a very lovely time of the year anyway. But to have everything sort of flocked with this icy coating really, really makes it beautiful out there. Enough about the weather. And we will talk more about that with Tornado Bob. We'll get the real scientific explanation. Somebody who knows what they're talking about coming up in the next hour. Some of the observations I've made, I like to end the year or begin the year. I'm not sure which, since I took these notes on the 31st, I guess it was the last day of 2020, with a list of birds and animals that I've encountered in that day. And among them, I had, starting with the animals, I had a cottontail rabbit. And a year ago and 2 years ago, I was overrun with cottontail rabbits. I had rabbits year round in my garden. I had to put up fencing to keep them off my peas. Just everywhere you looked, there were rabbits. This year, not many at all. In fact, I don't see a lot of rabbit tracks in my yard, so I know they're not hanging about. But the other day, one showed up at the feeder, nibbling on some of the sunflower seeds. And so that was the first rabbit I'd seen in a long, long time around here. My neighbor, Marvin Beer, says that there are still plenty of rabbits over at his house, but he lives on the edge of a field, and maybe that has something to do with it. We both of us live in the neighborhood of a great horned owl who has begun its winter hooting chorus. This is the time of year when great horned owls begin to court and will mate and begin their egg laying. And that will happen probably later this month or early February. And so they may have had something to do with the rabbit population fluctuations. Usually what happens with the rabbits is that as their numbers increase, then it's good feed, good food supply for the great horned owls. You get more great horned owls, you get more foxes, you get more coyotes, you get more mink. Everybody that likes rabbit does pretty well when the rabbit numbers are up. And as those populations increase, the rabbit numbers get forced down because everybody's eating rabbit. And ultimately, the rabbit population crashes, and followed by the crash of the coyotes, the fox, the mink, the great horned owls, everybody. It's this kind of cycle. First, the rabbits go up, and then everybody else goes up, and then the rabbits go down, and then everybody else goes down. So, but I have heard the great horned owls calling. That's exciting. Red squirrels are still coming around every day to my feeder. Generally in the midwinter like this, they might take a week off where they just kind of not hibernate, but they take a long nap and don't show up. But it's been so nice and warm that I've had rabbits or red squirrels at my feeder every day. And of course that gets the blood pressure in my dog up where it's probably at a dangerous level. If it were me, I'd probably have a heart attack, but the dog just seems to be like, let's go get that rabbit, that squirrel right now. Among the birds that I've had at my feeder on New Year's Eve, on the 31st of December, I had common redpolls. They have been sort of intermittently coming to the feeder. I get a little flock of them in and then they disappear for a few days and then they come back. So I suspect they're working the neighborhood and just finding feed where they can. Same thing is true of American goldfinches. I had a half a dozen of those at my feeder on New Year's Eve. And they have kind of, like the redpolls, are sort of here and then gone. The bald eagles have been hanging around and I hear them calling from time to time from the nest. I had, of course, common ravens. I can see those almost every day. There's a territorial pair that live here, and then all of the others that come around to see what's going on in this neighborhood. I saw American crows on the 31st. Also saw blue jays. For a while, I didn't have many blue jays, but now I've got a flock of six or seven that are kind of hanging out here every day. And then the woodpeckers, I have the pileated, the hairy, and the downy and the red-bellied woodpecker all coming to the, well, the pileated doesn't come to the feeder, but I have a rib cage of a deer out there and it comes to that and bangs away on that thing. And so I've got those four woodpeckers coming. Black-capped chickadees, they're, of course, ubiquitous. I'm sure all of you who have feeders or are paying any attention at all are probably seeing chickadees out there. This past week, they began to sing their Phoebe song, and that two-note or three-note song that goes, Phoebe, or Phoebe, bee. Hi, honey, cheeseburger. However you want to interpret it, they're beginning that song, and basically that is a hormonal reaction to increasing day length, and as we go through the coming months, February, March, April, they'll really get to calling that song. And ultimately, it will result in sort of the dissolution of the flock and the pairing up of male and female black-capped chickadees for the summer. So as you hear those notes, you need to think about the ongoing life cycle of the chickadee. Red-breasted and white-breasted nuthatches are hanging about, and they will begin to call a kind of a spring call that you will hear. Just listen. It's kind of an ink, 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 and you'll hear those nuthatches beginning to call. in the next month or so, probably by February 1st. The other bird that has been hanging about, and the one that has really got me excited, is the evening grosbeaks. And we haven't had evening grosbeaks here since, well, in flocks since probably the mid-90s. But I've got a flock that keeps getting a little bit larger. It was around 8 or 9, and now it's up above 12. And they show up every day and eat at the feeder. They like that feeder. They like the black oil sunflower seed. And they prefer a feeder with no top, a platform feeder. But at the evening grosbeaks aren't as fussy as the pine grosbeaks. The evening grosbeaks will come right to my covered feeder and eat the seeds there. The pine grosbeaks, they sometimes show up, but not for very long. And they much prefer a feeder with no top on it. They like that open spacing. And the other bird that we saw this past week, my wife and I were out for a hike on Sunday, and just 30 feet off to the side, the dog was running around, and all of a sudden up out of the snow burst a ruffed grouse. And so there's enough snow on the ground right now that they can get in and settle and stay warm. Not that it's got to be too much of a struggle for them this time of year to stay warm, but they are hanging about and using the snow as a nice warm blanket. They are eating the catkins, the male flowers, off of the American and beaked hazel. And they will be eating buds off of the male aspens and birch buds. So keep an eye out. In the next week or two, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see ruffed grouse dancing around on those really thin birch branches, kind of fluttering and hanging on out there and eating the male flowers off of the birches as well. So watch for all of those birds. Happy New Year. We're starting a brand new year. Let's hope that 2021 brings us a great outdoor experience and maybe a brand new bird or animal to our lives, and it will bring us great joy. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back again next week.